Welcome to Fully Vetted, Animal Care News from the Clinic to the Farm, presented by the Ohio Veterinary Medical Association. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Fully Vetted. I'm Kristen Bennett. Did you know the Hispanic community is the fastest growing population in the United States and Canada? Did you also know that almost a quarter of the 85 million pet owners in the U.S. are Hispanic, but only 5% of veterinarians are? Held annually between September 15th and October 15th, Hispanic Heritage Month celebrates the history, culture, and contributions of Latinx Americans. In this episode, we are joined by Dr. Liane Davila Martin. Apologies if I mispronounced that. I took 4 years of German in school. Liane is a 2022 Ohio State grad who is making her own contributions to veterinary medicine. She is passionate about improving Hispanic representation in the profession and providing more support to Hispanic veterinary students and pet owners, not only during this month, but year-round. Liane, thank you for joining us today on Fully Vetted. We're excited to have you on the show.
Thank you.
Before we get started, could you just maybe introduce yourself and tell us about your journey in veterinary medicine?
Yeah, I am Liane Davila Martin. I am originally from Puerto Rico, but have been a Buckeye since 2011. So I did my undergrad, my master's, and went to vet school at The Ohio State University. I've always wanted to be a veterinarian. Like, there was just no other thing that I saw myself doing. But throughout, like, my higher education career, I definitely got my feet wet in different aspects of veterinary medicine. So, you know, equine, I did a little bit of small animal general practice and work at the zoo in Puerto Rico. And I also did research. So all of those things, you know, I was like, oh, you know, what are all the roles that a veterinarian can play in the world? And I just blew my mind. And so I ended up, you know, pursuing my master's in public health. And now I am the veterinary epidemiologist for the Ohio Department of Agriculture.
Well, wonderful. Thank you for sharing that with us. So as a Latinx veterinarian, you've expressed that advocating for diversity and inclusion in the veterinary profession is something that you're passionate about. So I found that defining diversity in vet med is one thing, but defining the dimensions of diversity is another, because really, like, there's no aspect of diversity that exists in isolation. So can you share with us, like, your definition of diversity and why giving back to the Hispanic community in Columbus and the profession at large is important to you?
Yeah, I think diversity and inclusion is more of an umbrella term. For me, it is not just about our ethnicity or nationalities or, you know, cultures and religions. It also means diversity in backgrounds, diversity in different shared experiences and goals, you know. And so when you have multiple minds that are from different places and have different career paths, they bring so much more to the table than a group of people that are the same, from the same place, doing the same thing. You think outside of the box a little bit easier, or you have other perspectives, right? So that's my definition of diversity. It's just a little bit of everything. So we're a melting pot. This can be applied to any profession that you do. Giving back to the Hispanic community is important for me because I have been in situations since moving here to Ohio where I felt that because I had an accent or I'm from somewhere else, like, those situations maybe wouldn't have happened. And so I don't want people to go through the same things that other Hispanics have gone through, and definitely some of the things that me and my family have faced since we moved here. You know, providing mentorship and be listening, and you're just a little bit more empathetic to your community when you go through those kind of things. So giving back to your community, whether that is the Hispanic community or just the community where you live in, I think it should be important for everybody.
So right now we are celebrating Hispanic Heritage Month, and we wanted to share some relevant statistics that might be eye-opening for our listeners. So according to the AVMA, there are about 121,500 veterinarians practicing in the U.S. in 2021. However, a small fraction of those veterinarians are Hispanic, about 5%. So in your opinion, as a Hispanic veterinarian, why is this community so underrepresented in the profession?
Yeah, I want to emphasize what you just said. We have 20 million Hispanic pet owners and only 60,000 veterinarians that speak Spanish or are considered Hispanic. The Hispanic community, the Latino community, is underrepresented across all the different professions, not just in veterinary medicine. But veterinary medicine is already such a small community that it makes much more of an impact. The Black, you know, African-American community is also underrepresented in this field, and even more for the Asian community. It's a predominantly white profession here in the United States. Let's put some things in perspective. We have about 155 accredited human medical schools in the United States, but we only have 30 veterinary schools with a limited amount of seats. So Ohio State is actually the biggest class, but the biggest class that they accept in each graduating class. So it's about 165 students. But other schools, it's only 60, it's only 80. So that is a very small amount. So obviously we're getting more medical doctors graduating each year. Veterinary school, it's a very extremely competitive field to get into just because of that, whether you're from here or you have a different culture or background. I think there are a few components that can't lead to this underrepresentation of minority communities. Some of us, when we move here, we don't only need to get really good grades to get into vet school. We need experience. We need people that support us and will write those letters of recommendation, right? I had the privilege that my parents have always been very supportive of me going into college. They both went to college, so I'm not a first-generation student. They both did their master's. So college was like in the books for me. Like there was no doubt. And I was supported by my family. And so on the weekends, I was able to take time and volunteer at these places. Not everybody has that same experience. They have to work on the weekends to pay their bills or help their family. They don't have time to spend like 4 or 5 hours every weekend when they have to study, when they also work full-time or even part-time. So that's just one thing. And then the other thing is like there is a lack of encouragement when it comes to our minority students starting from a very young age.
According to the 2020 census, the Hispanic community is the fastest growing population in the United States and Canada. Now, recognizing that, and there might be, you know, some imbalance in representation, what are some of the persistent challenges that you're seeing as a result of that imbalance?
I think there are multiple things that factor in into this these challenges that we face. And again, it's not just the Hispanic community, but other minorities. We have lack of representation. We have lack of cultural awareness and language barriers that can lead to clients' non-compliance, right? So I want to share a personal story that I think will drive the point home. When I moved here to Ohio, I went to Pickerington High School North. And so right before classes started, I remember going with my mom to register for classes. They were insisting that I take English as a second language and like all regular classes. I came from a school in Puerto Rico where I had a 4.0 GPA. I was in advanced math and advanced English. I've known English since I was like maybe in second grade, I think we started. We read Shakespeare by the time that we were in seventh grade. I remember reading Diary of Anne Frank, maybe in junior high. I remember reading Harry Potter in English. You know, maybe my accent was very thick, but I was fully capable of understanding what you were saying. And it was just such a shock to me. My mom was like, you know, just give her a try. Let's put her in the classes that she's supposed to be and she'll prove you wrong. And so they did. They gave me a chance and I was able to graduate with honors. And I remember there was a banquet right before graduation where they give you like this distinguished scholar $1 medal. And the principal at the time telling me after the banquet that I was among the first few Hispanic students to graduate with such a honor. At the time, I was like, okay, peace. Like, I'm out of high school. I get to go to college and actually do what I want to do. I really didn't think too much into it. But now as you're an adult, you go back and you go back to those scenarios and you're like, why was that the case? We were a class of 500 and I had classmates that were Hispanic as well. We were just not encouraged. We're encouraged to pass so we can graduate, but we weren't encouraged to excel like my other classmates. I remember going to my counselor's office and asking about applications for college and really not being given, you know, it's like, oh, you should apply to Yale, you know, something like that. I just remember, oh, you can apply to Columbus Community College and there's like a bunch of other schools here in Ohio. And I remember asking for scholarships, like, what are the scholarships out there? And just be given a website to look into it. All my classmates already, you know, had applied to like 10, 15 schools, and I was beginning of my senior year, and I had not even started any of this. At the time, I'm like, you know, oh, well, that's odd. But now I realize I was just not encouraged. I'm like, just because I was Hispanic, had an accent, I'm not from there originally, I was just not expected to maybe do this well. Once in college, I remember sitting in, you know, a classroom of 100 students and looking around and knowing that there was no one that looked like me or sounded like me. I am the only like Latino in this class. And it was very intimidating at first. I think the same goes for, you know, other minorities and that's what we face. But then I took it as an opportunity to like prove people wrong. It wasn't until veterinary school that I had professors that were Hispanic or, you know, they spoke Spanish with me. And I was just so cool to learn about equine medicine or talk about ClinPath with a Hispanic professor. That was just, it just blew my mind. But I had not had that for the previous 7 years that I was in school.
You know, it's so disheartening to hear that, especially given it sounds like, you know, you excelled as a student. So given that, you know, you stepped into this space of, you know, a new school, you asked and stepped up to the challenge of, you know, being put in the classes that you had every right to be in. And I'm assuming that you had the grades, you know, to show that you desired and deserved to be there. But given that you still weren't given the opportunities or encouraged to, you know, go to college or on an Ivy League scale, like, yeah, we got this thing over here called Heidelberg or Columbus State that you could apply for.
Yeah.
But the fact that those things exist, a little over 10 years ago, is just so disheartening for me. But I love the grit that you possess because you didn't let that stop you. So, you know, you still found a way. And I think that's a lot of, you know, some of the minority experiences that you do. You just always have to find an alternative way because you're not going to get that first look. Like, people aren't going to look to you and think that you deserve to be in the room, let alone that you can excel when you're in the room. So congratulations to you for just not giving up. Because I think a lot of people get discouraged from, you know, pursuing their dreams because they don't have the support.
Absolutely.
And the thing that you said about how you looked around and saw no one else like you, and that was intimidating to you. But listening to your story, I'm intimidated by you. Like, you're so impressive. I mean, truly.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Although you are a relatively new veterinarian, having graduated in 2022, you have worked in a variety of different settings throughout school and after graduation. You mentioned working in a research setting, in a shelter, in a zoo. I saw on your resume you worked at some animal rescues, a mixed animal practice right after graduation, and now you're in a public health role. So I think I know the answer to this question before I even ask it, but have you seen these barriers and underrepresentation across the board in all these settings, or is it especially pronounced in one place over the other?
100% has been across multiple settings, in high school, in college, or even among your peers and in organizations. You don't notice it at the time unless you're hyper aware. But I remember when I moved here as a 16-year-old going into junior year of high school, just the little things that people commented on now that I'm older and more aware about the microaggressions that we deal on a daily basis, looking back, I was suffering microaggressions almost every single day. And, you know, I want to mention that Hispanics don't all look the same. We come in all different shades and colors, like I like to say. For someone, before they hear me, they just assume that I'm a white, you know, a Caucasian person because I'm pale. I like to tell everybody, that's why they kicked me out of Puerto Rico. The only thing that they could notice that was different is just the accent. And just from that, the questions or the comments that arouse from those situations, it just baffles my mind. And I thought, you know, when I was in my master's, you know, in grad school or even in vet school, that these maybe wouldn't happen because we're all adults and hopefully have an open mind, at least, you know, in academic setting. But that wasn't the case. It wasn't like super pronounced, but you can notice it once in a while. Getting asked if I was an immigrant or, you know, how's my green card test? You know, do you want to take it as an opportunity to educate someone or get bothered by it? You know, it is not my responsibility to educate people, but otherwise I will be so mad all the time, you know? And so I took it as an opportunity to educate them. So just simply telling them, hey, you know, Puerto Rico, it's an island, yeah, in the Caribbean. We speak Spanish, but we're actually a territory. We're a commonwealth of the United States. And so as soon as we're born, we're considered citizens. But again, that is not my responsibility. I take it upon myself to do that because otherwise I would just be mad at the world that I live in. You do see these barriers and underrepresentation anywhere you go when you are a minority. Not just in the academic world, in the workforce also. I was a mixed animal veterinarian in rural Ohio for a little bit less than a year, and I couldn't last. I loved my clients, I loved my farmers, I loved my patients and what I did, but I always felt there was a little bit of discouragement for me to do well from some peers. And so if I face that and I have, you know, light skin, I can't imagine other people, what they go through on a daily basis, to have maybe darker skin and they're not considered, you know, your typical Caucasian American person.
It's sad that it makes such a difference, but I do have to commend you for the self-love, number one, and giving yourself grace and knowing that, you know what, this might not be the role for me. So thank you for sharing that, because I think it's important for people to hear those things, because, you know, if it's not your lived experience, sometimes it's hard to have empathy for people. You sharing your story, I think, makes it pretty apparent that these things do exist for some of their peers.
Absolutely.
How have you taken steps within your various roles as a student and now a practicing veterinarian to address some of these barriers to improve representation in the profession?
You know, anywhere you go, you're going to find some sort of organization or like-minded people, right? And I had the privilege of attending one of the biggest schools that just always had some sort of support for our, you know, different beliefs and cultures and tradition. Ohio State has a bunch of organizations for students where students and, you know, staff and faculty can also be a part of. So throughout my undergrad, I was very fortunate to find the Puerto Rican Student Association, which blew my mind that we had that. And so I was a member of it for a few years and then became the president while I was in my master's. And then in grad school, I remember being one of the ambassadors for the College of Public Health. Anytime I saw someone that maybe sounded like me, I'm like encouraging them to apply to grad school. So that's always been one of my main passions in life, is encouraging other people to know that they're not alone and that they can definitely do it. And even now as a veterinarian, there are so many opportunities to do that. And I think that's how us as Hispanic or as minority students or anybody can improve representation within the profession, but also within your everyday life.
obviously, that language barrier between vets and clients can have detrimental effects on animal health simply because the opportunity for misunderstandings on both sides is so high. For your English-speaking, non-bilingual peers, can you offer any suggestions for overcoming these barriers and improving communication with Latinx clients?
Let's first talk about why this could be a big issue. So you talked about misunderstanding in between both parties, right? A lot of our non-English speakers, or even English speakers, but they're not as fluently, when they go to the doctor, whether that is a human doctor or a veterinarian, they usually have someone trying to translate for them. And I have seen personally a lot of the kids translating it. Hell, my mom had to do the same for her mom when they lived in Germany many years ago. They don't necessarily know the medical terminology. So there is a big opportunity for miscommunication. And that can affect the way that we can provide the best standard of care for our clients. Because maybe we didn't understand right. And if we don't get a full history for that patient, perhaps we cannot find out what's actually happening with the animal. Maybe we were able to do everything, but it has a set of instructions. And so that's when accidental non-compliance can affect the pet's health. Maybe instead of giving the insulin every day like they're supposed to, they give it every once in a while. You know, like things like that. That's 100% preventable. For other veterinarians and other people out there in similar professions and situations, being able to provide resources in their native language can go very far. Maybe you have someone on staff that is able to translate for those clients, or even something as simple as providing clients brochures or a website in their native language. And then you point out to them, this is what I need you to read. You know, little things like that, they feel more comfortable with you and they are more likely to seek out veterinary services knowing that you're there on their corner.
We are, as mentioned, we are recording during Hispanic Heritage Month. Have you seen any efforts by your peers or the veterinary community at large to celebrate and acknowledge the holiday and the contributions that the Hispanic community has made to the profession?
I had the opportunity to attend the top four veterinary school in the nation and Ohio State. You know, no institution is perfect, but I was very surprised at their support with affinity groups. I was encouraged first year to start the first Latino affinity group. So I ended up starting the Latinx and Vet Men group. And this was open to any faculty or any staff or any student that was interested. And I just remember Dean Moore telling me, hey, you should start this. Hey, you should start this. And so I think some institutions are definitely going a mile and beyond for those situations, for their students to make them feel at home and feel comfortable. A lot of people come from out of state, and so being able to provide a way where they can find home away from home, I think it's amazing. There's many organizations out there that are doing great things. There is the Latinx Veterinary Medical Association that was started a few years ago to empower Latinx veterinarians and vet students. And it's a relatively new establishing organization, but I am so excited to see it grow and the impact that it can have in the future. Just knowing that that's out there, it's a little peace of mind that I have some people to look up to and role models there. There's other organizations, even here in Columbus. We have the Ohio Hispanic Coalition that does amazing, great things for our Hispanic community. But I want to be honest, it's not just always up to the institution. Some of these changes has to start on an individual level, and that is by being open-minded, you know, listening to people, learning about their experiences, and acknowledging them. Maybe you don't believe in it, maybe you don't understand it, but just acknowledging that their challenges are valid and that you appreciate them for speaking up, for being their true authentic selves. But there's a lot of room for improvement on an individual level and on a professional level. Just taking the time to listen, what are those needs? What are the tools that those students need or those veterinarians need? I think it's an amazing start.
For those listeners who are inspired by what you've shared today, do you have any suggestions for resources for where they can go to get educated and become kind of an ally to the Hispanic community?
Being involved in your community is in itself a great place to start. Whether you're maybe volunteering at an event or providing mentorship to someone else that may need it, I think that's a great way to support the Hispanic community. Something as simple as listening to a podcast. You know, you may not want to start conversations with real people, so start with a podcast. Learn about something else that's happening in the world that can be affecting someone in your community. I listen to NPR a lot, and they have this podcast called Consider This. And usually they take something that's happening and explain it and have, you know, people talk about it. And for example, I encountered one that was about Puerto Rico and how natural disasters that have recently taken place in the island have affected tremendously the mental health in children and their academic, their education. And so taking the time to listen to that and then like ruminate on what you just heard, I think that goes far. Even just attending and supporting Latinx or Hispanic businesses, like go to the Latinx Festival that happens every summer, and you can experience food and the culture and the music, and it's just like you step into another world. And so I think just being open-minded is a way to support your Hispanic community.
Latino Fest is one of the best festivals in the city, so I'm a fan. Well, before we let you go, is there anything else that you'd like to share? Any final thoughts for our listeners?
I think we should empower everybody to pursue what they want, regardless of their culture, their traditions, or some other differences that you might see. We may not all get along, even within the community, but empowering each other, I think, is one of the most precious gifts that we can give someone else. Growing up, I had amazing family and support. And then when I moved here, even though I didn't see a lot of representation throughout many years in my higher education, I was so supported. And I always made it an effort to speak up or just to be involved and represent my community. So do well, do good, and empower other people. Be their role models. Provide mentorship that can make a great impact in your community and in the society.
Do you by chance do any mentoring?
I would love to. I wish there was a way that we could just like make a group chat and people can say, I need someone and I can help them. I mean, life is rough, but veterinary school is so rough even more. So I would love to provide mentorship. So if any student or even a professional out there just wants to talk about similar or different experiences or just needs a little help for a little motivation, a little encouragement, I'm your girl.
Would it be okay if we included your email in the show notes?
Oh, yeah.
Well, awesome. Well, thank you for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That's a wrap on today's episode. Special thanks to today's guest for joining us on the show.
And thank you to our listening audience for tuning in. As always, please feel free to visit fullyvettedpodcast.com for show notes and to provide listener feedback.
And if you haven't done so already, please subscribe on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you never miss an episode.
Don't forget to follow Fully Vetted on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn.
Like the show? Please submit a quick rating and comment on Apple Podcasts to help us reach more listeners like you.
Until next time, stay safe and be well.